So a rabbi, a priest, and an imam walk into a bar. The bartender says, "What is this, a joke?" That's the whole joke. But the premise of that joke, and of all such what we should call religious division jokes, is that in some way, subsequently, the three of them are going to act differently, always, by the way, to the advantage of the group that's telling the joke, right? In our jokes, the rabbi always says something clever at the end. And there is, I suppose, a certain worthiness and advantage to pointing out whatever the differences are in religious traditions and practices and beliefs and histories. But there is also an important and a worthy, I think, undertaking in talking about what makes someone religious, or a system religious, or a worldview religious, in a way that doesn't divide up and slice up the world according to denominations or religions, but speaks more broadly about what does it mean that there are people all over the world, billions of them, who in one way or another consider themselves religious and feel as though that's an integral part of the way they define their human experience. Now, this is obviously such a hugely broad question that in a few minutes no one could do it justice, but you do it less justice if you don't discuss it at all. So I want to offer three characteristics of religions in general, and surely they all have deep roots in our own tradition, that describe in a way that is not a caricature what it means to be religious. And the first is the sense that there is an ethical order to the world. What we saw in this morning's parsha, where it says, Shoftim v'shotrim, that you should appoint judges and keepers of the peace in your society, not because it serves your self-interest alone, although it does, but because that is what God wants of you in the world. And this idea that when something is wrong, it isn't just wrong because it bothers you, but it's wrong because it goes against the pattern that the world should demonstrate, the way things should be. That idea that there is this invisible ethical structure to the world, that's a religious idea. Because it isn't dependent on the imperatives of evolution or biology. It's a spiritual imperative. I remember there was a wonderful cartoon in The New Yorker. It showed a big fish with very sharp teeth pursuing a smaller fish. And underneath it said, "What would Darwin do?" If the only imperatives are biological, then there isn't an ethical order. There is an order of self-interest. But to take the story from the Talmud, when Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is walking the streets of Rome and he sees that the pillars of the beautiful Roman buildings are wrapped in elaborate tapestries so that during the extremes of temperature, hot to cold, they will not crack and in any way diminish the value of the building. And then he walks on and he sees beggars in the street who don't have clothes to wear, and he looks back at the tapestries that wrap the buildings but don't wrap the beggars. He doesn't think, "Too bad for the beggar." He thinks this is a fundamental violation of what God wants in this world. Things should be a certain way. As the English essayist Hazlitt wrote, Man is the only animal that laughs and cries because he is the only animal that is struck by the difference between the way things are and the way they should be. Well, where do you get your vision of the way they should be? We see in a religious tradition, as it were, with the eyes of God, that is, in a world where the lion lays down with the lamb, where there is harmony and where there is peace. That's where we get our should be, our sense of ethical order, and that's one characteristic of a worldview that religion espouses at its best. The second is that there is just a pattern to the world, not just of ethics, but of aesthetics, of beauty. Max Kedushin, the great scholar of rabbinic literature at the Jewish Theological Seminary in the last century, said the rabbis were normal mystics. He said they didn't have visions. They weren't mystics in that they went off to a cave for 20 years. They were mystics in that they saw God in the world in everyday things. And by the way, that ability to see the patterning of the world is something that religion shares with art. When an artist like Paul Klee says what he does is he takes a line out for a walk, a beautiful phrase about his art. That's how he paints. He just takes a line out for a walk. Or when a poet sees an image in the world that has not seen that image before, there are two ways of thinking about it. Let me give you an image from a religious poet, Hopkins, Gerard Manley Hopkins, who begins his poem, Pied Beauty, "Glory be to God for dappled things, for skies of couple color as a brindled cow." Now, let me unpack that for you, because it's hard to hear poetry. Skies of couple color, couple meaning two, right? Skies of two color, light and dark. And he sees on the earth a brindled cow. Brindle also means light and dark. The patterns on the cow, and if you've ever seen cows, they have dark patches on their white skin. The colors on the cow match the colors in the sky. Now, for Hopkins, that's not an accident. The patterning of the world and the beauty of the world that he sees with the eye of the poet, that's intended. And he doesn't mean that God said, oh, it would be really neat if I made those cows two colors, because the sky's two color. He means something deeper, more profound and more beautiful, which is that when you see beauty in the world, you're not creating it, you're discovering it. That God made a world of infinite, intricate patterns through long history, made through all the mechanisms that science unfolds for us. And when you see those patterns, you're discovering, as it were, the beauty that God seeded in the world from the very beginning. So it's not an accident, and it's not an invention. It is intended, and it's a discovery. And the same sense that you have ethically, you have aesthetically. That you have for morals, you have for beauty. And so when you combine those two, and you get a moral and a beautiful image, it's exactly the kind of image that you find over and over and over again in the Torah and in all religious traditions. And such images unfold themselves to you over time. You know the well-known Hasidic phrase from Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav, Kol ha'olam kulo gesher tsar ma'od v'ha'ikar lo lefached klal. All of life and all of the world is a very narrow bridge. And the essence is not to be afraid. The more you think about that, the more you realize how life can change in an instant, the more you understand the precariousness of every single day, the more you feel the reality of the narrow bridge. But the more deeply you live, the more fully you experience, the more expansive your soul, you feel how important it is to walk across that bridge without fear. And what Rabbi Nachman is teaching is not what he believes he has come up with, but what he believes, and this is the third aspect of the religious tradition, what he believes has come through him. For someone who is religious, your creativity is a reflection of being a prism, not a source of light. Every individual soul reflects the light that exists in the world in his or her own colors. But not because the light starts with you, but rather because the light moves through you. Because that's the idea of a religious disposition in the world, is things don't begin and end with us. There is a narcissism and an egotism to the banishment of transcendence. Once you push transcendence out of the world, and really it's all about you. But there is a humility to understanding that you are in fact a vehicle in this world. That even though every human being is unique, you're unique in part because the expression of whatever universal spirit exists comes through your special gift. That's why the Talmud teaches that a human king mints coins and they all look alike, but God mints human beings and each one is different. So there's not only an ethical order and an aesthetic order, but there's also a sense that you bring something to the world that wouldn't exist if you weren't here, but it doesn't actually start inside you. It rather moves through you to the next and the next and the next, l'dor v'dor, in the chain of the generations. And that belief, the belief that you are an instrument for the music of the world, that's a religious belief. And that's why you owe an absolute ethical obligation to other human beings. You know, it doesn't get much play in the press, but it's no surprise that the greatest, the largest by far, humanitarian relief organization in the world is a religious organization, not a governmental organization, not a non-governmental, non-religious organization. Because there is this sense in the religious tradition that you owe that to other people. Because we are tied, all of us together, not only by an ethical order, not only by an appreciation of the beauty of the created world, but by the sense that what moves through us moves through all of us. Not just one of us, not one group, not one town, not one country, but all God's created world. That's what it is to be religious. And that breaks down in a million different ways. Because what Judaism is a system and a language with which you can try to live in harmony with whatever that is that we cannot understand. With whatever God is that is so much infinitely greater than what we are that even our metaphors fail. But if you want to know how to live in a way that can align you with whatever that is, that's what a religion seeks to teach. It's a pattern of life so that you can live in a way that we call sacred or holy, so that you can open yourself up as a channel for that spirit to move through you, so that you can look at the world and instead of seeing random and often tragic and disconnected things, you can see a pattern and a tapestry where the faults and flaws and evil and unkindness need your help and your tikkun, your repair. All I ask, wrote the poet, is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. We're the ship, the world is the ship. And a tradition is the star by which we steer. That's why we're here. We're here for community, that is, for reasons that are horizontal, one to another, to another, to another, but also we're here to reach beyond ourselves because we believe in an inchoate, unexpressed way that, as I say, lies too deep for metaphors or words. We believe that there is something infinitely greater than ourselves, and even though we can't express it, we can reach towards it. Even though we cannot say it, we can pray it. We can feel it as it moves through us in our best moments. We know that the world is a narrow bridge. We know that there are lots of reasons to be afraid. We know, all of us, the perils of life and the certainty of death. But we also know, on some deep level, that we are part of something greater. That this isn't only about us. And that's why at the end, Rabbi Nachman says, you can walk across the bridge and you need not be afraid. At bottom, I think that's what it is to be religious. Shabbat Shalom.